morning, and welcome to the Green Country Gardener Program on K1 AM 1400 FM 93.3. Our phone lines are open if you have questions or comments for our expert Larry Glass at 1-800-749-5935. Our Green Country Gardener Program is brought to you by Green Thumb Nurseries, United Rentals, Kelly Banks Tree Service, Peter's True Value Hardware. Sharpen your shovels and let's get outside. All righty. Shovel sharpened, ready to go. Phone lines open for the Green Country Gardener Show. Again, 1-800-749-5936. Get you in with Larry Glass. That's Larry's brother playing the banjo. He's good.
Bet.
He's good
at that. Very good. Boy, I tell you, mud. Ugh.
Mud?
Yes. My shovel is heavy enough as it is. It weighs about 30 pounds.
Yeah.
And then you put the mud on top of it. Man, what a workout. Yesterday we were attempting to dig some holes yesterday.
Yeah, they got refilled as the slosh came back.
Yeah, for just maybe 3 or 4 seconds, the sun came out.
Oh, yeah, it did.
And it got hot.
Wow.
It was miserable. Then we came back to the nursery. It was cold. Can't you guys make up your mind?
We're working on it. I'll put in a good word.
How can that work in that? Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, at the nursery, golly, we've got all kinds of stuff. Shrubs are getting a little difficult to find some of them.
There's been a run on shrubs?
And we do have a pretty good selection of shrubs right now. Mm-hmm. Your dwarf yopons and boxwoods and kaleidoscope abelias. It's kind of a new-ish sort of plant. And being a member of the abelia family is pretty tough.
They just don't let anybody in.
Well, they did survive the winter, although some of them were cut back a little bit. Mm-hmm. But golly, when they recover, they grow so fast. And these like the sun. They can tolerate the heat and the drought and all that. And you have different colored leaves on them, too, anywhere from red-colored leaves to orange to yellow, a bit of white here and there, and some green.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about them also is the genetics are very stable.
Very good.
On some variegated species of plants, genetics tend to sport.
Gah.
Sport is a term we use in the horticultural field to where something shifts genetically on a particular branch or something, or a tree or a leaf or so, would change its appearance. Either physiologically or colorly. Is that a word? I don't know. Anyway, or by color, put it that way. It can change. A variegation can shift. And Euonymus is famous for this sporting out to different colors, as are some of the boxwoods and so on. But the kaleidoscope abelia maintains good, steady genetics on its lifespan. So anyway, that's a good one. They're available in not only kaleidoscope, but some other colors. So they've had a lot of fun breeding these and been very successful with it. So it's a good plant for Oklahoma because it'll take the wet.
And when it gets wet.
It'll take the cold. It'll take the heat.
When
and
it
the
gets
dry
hot.
And all that other stuff. So it's a good plant, too. So I like to use them in the landscape for bits of color accents here and there. Basically effortless color in the landscape. And if they get too big, just cut them back.
They'll grow.
They're a member of the abelia family, which is also a member of the honeysuckle family of plants, and they're pretty hardy plants, and when they bloom they're kind of nice too. So anyway, there that's that plant, and we have several others too. One plant that is coming into vogue more is a type of Japanese holly, and I don't know why I have a hard time remembering the name of this particular plant, but I do. But anyway, it's a good parallel to the dwarf yopine holly. And it does quite well in the landscape. For Japanese holly, it does very well. Japanese hollies can be extraordinarily picky as far as soil structure and pH are concerned. But when I think of the name of this plant, when I remember it, I'll mention it, but nonetheless. it's a compact growing plant, too, and I like it very much so. Anyway, on your moving away from that, on your fruit trees right now, you still want to avoid systemics if possible at this time. Some of them might be in bloom still, but not really. I don't think any of the fruit trees are in bloom. So if you do have a problem with borers, which is a very common problem for members of the prunus family, you might want to consider putting something on to control that. There's a couple of methodologies that you can choose to get rid of borers. And one is a systemic insecticide, That would be in the form of, say, imidacloprid or a topical application. And, mm-hmm. and the old one was dicistone, was the one we used to use. Mm-hmm. It's pretty nasty stuff. But we don't. It's not available anymore. Mm-hmm. So now we use a product called spinosad, which is an organic derivative.
Got it.
Very effective in controlling insects. Insects that are above the ground on it, neem oil works rather well for insects and fungus. Neem oil is a life cycle interrupter. It also, because it's an oil, it coats the insect and mm-hmm. smothers them out. But if it gets on them, stops their metamorphosis, if you will. So they're pretty cool mechanism there.
There you go.
For insects. Look for borer activity. Scrape away some of the bark, and if there's frass and dried sap underneath there, you might want to apply spinosad to the trunks. Spinosad is another insecticide besides neem oil that works very well for borers. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of it with fruit trees. Enjoy the fruit. I know my my cherry trees are starting to ripen, and as they ripen,
there you go.
They get this nasty fungus on them from weather.
Yeah.
So it's going to be another crop failure this year on the cherries. However,
here I was. You said, "Oh my gosh!" And I was sitting there thinking, "Well, you're going to have a bumper crop."
And now it's going to be a good year, but I think it's going to be a good crop for plums.
Oh, good.
So the plums are ripening. So, so I think we'll have this will be a good year for plum jelly this year. So,
world famous plum jelly.
Get out of here!
From the glass household.
Anyway. So also if you've got some peach trees that are putting on some peaches, congratulations, you're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
You might look at the count of the fruit and see maybe if you've got a whole lot on there. If you have a real abundant crop, you might look at some of the deformed fruits or some of the ugly fruits and selectively remove them. You'll get better quality fruit if you don't have so much of it.
Mm-hmm. Cull the herd,
yes. So, and look very closely at them and see if there's any imperfections or lesions or holes in them from mm-hmm. insect activity. And those, you probably want to, don't waste your time growing those. You want to spend your time on the ones that are in really good shape and let them grow.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's kind of my thoughts on fruit trees right now. Fertilizer, go ahead and do a week to moderate application of fertilizer. Always follow the directions
mm-hmm.
on the container on fertilization. Don't want to overdo it. And you might give them a little bit of fertilizer if they look like they need it. So, okay. On the vegetable garden right now, it's still time to plant the warm season seeds.
Boy, I'm glad you said that because I misread that. Looked like it said time to plant the weeds. I'm going, I'm doing pretty good on that. No, we got to get the seeds in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I got good crop of weeds.
Right. The ground really hasn't warmed up a whole lot. It's getting
uh-huh.
kind of warm.
Uh-huh.
So I still wouldn't put the mulch on the tomatoes unless we've had at least one or two good sunny days to get that soil temperature
up
a little bit.
Yeah, got to do that. Yeah.
Gypsum, you might want to prepare the soil if you haven't yet, and
mm-hmm.
Maybe put a little gypsum in there. Our soil here naturally has a tendency to be somewhat heavy in clay, and the gypsum helps break that up a little bit. And I like to use a little coarse sand along mm-hmm. with some organic material just so you have a really easy-to-work soil. So you might consider companion planting also.
Companion planting,
yeah. You don't want your vegetables to be lonely. So
no. plants that work well together.
Right. And I have had a good idea adding magnesium sulfate to your tomatoes, too, if you mm-hmm. haven't done that yet. It's not too late. So not too much. It's just a little sprinkle here and
mm-hmm.
there. It doesn't take much. The potatoes should be about 12 to 18 inches high at this point. If they mm-hmm. haven't rotted, about knee high they should be.
Oh, goodness.
And it'll be soon time to harvest those tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So when they begin to bloom, it's kind of time to get those out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
A few tomatoes are having maybe some issues with the cool, wet weather. I noticed my tomatoes yesterday when I was mowing the grass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was really harvesting the hay in the backyard, as you'd say. The tomatoes were starting to kind of pull out of their purple phase from being mm-hmm. so cold and starting to grow a little bit. Got some blooms, actually little tomatoettes on them. So they're coming along pretty cool. So you should be able to get harvest some tomatoes pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And you might want to use a fertilizer, say with some trace elements, one that specifically is stated for tomatoes will have the items necessary for the tomatoes to do well. So in the lawn this week, the Bermuda grass and zoysia grass is really starting to grow right now. The Bermuda grass isn't really ticking off yet. It's just kind of holding back a little bit. Same with the zoysia grass. Pretty soon, though, it should, soon as it likes the hot weather. Yeah, and looking at the weather forecast on the wall, we're not going to have too much on there. So.
No, we might touch 80 here.
So
and there.
It's growing in a very fine texture right now. Mm-hmm. I noticed that in my yard. When I harvested the hay yesterday. No, it wasn't that bad.
Nah.
I was able to run full throttle and full speed.
There you go.
So it did just fine.
Now, by Wednesday, we're going to be in the mid-80s. That should be.
That's good, yeah. That's so I think that the soil temperature will begin to go up a little bit.
Yeah.
And when we achieve that 65-degree-plus soil temperature, mm-hmm. you can put down some mulch mm-hmm. on there. And that'll help control weeds and conserve moisture. Yeah. One of these days, you guys are going to turn that little valve over there, that little switch, and turn the water off, and it's going to get kind of dry, so we want to plan for that. So anyway, and zoysia grass is kind of doing the same thing. I noticed crabgrass is coming up in some people's yards. Yeah, if you didn't do your pre-emergent, then you probably mm-hmm. do have some crabgrass.
Mm-hmm.
It's at a yard yesterday, the whole thing is just solid crabgrass. I said, okay.
All right.
So it's up. It's a little late this year, but it's up. You can use a quinclorac to control the crabgrass mm-hmm. to get rid of it in its young stage at this point, mm-hmm. Or Q
is a good
short term for that. Quinclorac's a little difficult to say, but you can use Q to control that. Be careful how much Q you use. It'll set back your Bermuda grass quite a bit, and be prepared for that when you do use quinclorac on your Bermuda grass. It will, kind of like MSMA did when we used that, it sets your Bermuda grass back to a point where it's really not growing. And actually, it kind of dies off a little bit, mm-hmm. but it pops back up shortly.
Yeah. Little dabble do you is what you're saying?
Exactly. Or you can go back in time. They were talking about that on the radio show, this transportation. Yeah. Go back in time and put a pre-emergent on your yard.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, with all the rain we've had, though, and if you do have some of your crabgrass control left, you might consider putting a light application on just to maintain the effectiveness of the chemical. Not a whole lot, just kind of a light application. It's mm-hmm. rained. It's been rainy, but we haven't had any real heavy gully washers.
No, thank goodness.
Toad stranglers. What other term do we use for heavy rain?
Frog drowner.
Okay, frog drowners, yeah. We really haven't had any of, well, we've had some good steady rains, which is fortunate mm-hmm. because it soaks into the ground. It doesn't just run off and go down the street and leave dry ground below it. So so we've had some good deep rains, but no toad stranglers. So I would say your pre-emergence is probably pretty well intact at this point in the ground.
Good. Right now, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and we're going to be back with more of the Green Country Gardener program after this two-minute timeout.
Hello, this is Tim from United Reynolds. If you call United Reynolds Strategic Sales Team, you may not get someone directly with Bartlesville, but you'll get someone from the Tulsa Metro. We all pull out the same inventory. The reason we do that is so that we can give each customer the amount of time that they need. We don't want to rush anyone, and that's why we have a strategic sales team call center. We are local and customer focused. You can give us a call at United Reynolds, 918-333-9580.
Spring is here at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses. And Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses has new shipments of annuals, perennials, herbs, trees, and shrubs arriving daily. It's a must-see what they have in stock. Get ready for spring at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses, home to Bartlesville's largest plant selection. Discount days are back. Every Wednesday, take 10% off regular priced items. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5, Sunday.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
Live, loud, local, and apparently lovable.
I can't tell you enough great things.
Locally sourced news, weather, and sports. I'm Tom Davis. I'll have your news headlines. Phil Weaver lets you know what's going on in the community. Local sports with Evan Farbach. And weather updates with KOTB News on 6 meteorologist Alan Crow. K1 Morning News.
I love it. I love it.
The one you trust at AM 1400 and FM 93.3. Alrighty, it's the Green Country Gardener Program. It is 8:24, and our phone lines are open at 1-800-749-5936. And that'll get you on the air on this rainy Saturday with Larry Glass, our Green Country Gardener.
This year, the crepe myrtles, they got cut back rather sternly from the cold we had.
Ooh, yeah, they did.
And they're going to refresh this year, if you want to put a positive term on it.
Okay, because I know some folks who I can clearly put down in the iffy column. They got their doubts.
Yeah, they're gonna be coming up from the roots. And traditionally, we try to market the crepe myrtles as a shrub rather than a tree form.
Okay.
Because of these spontaneous cold spells we have in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
They happen every so many years.
7 or 8, it looks like.
Yeah, so what you want to do on your crepe myrtle is, I was at somebody's house this last week, in fact. And the crepe myrtle was just starting to come out real high. She just about gave it up on it. Fortunately, the chainsaw wouldn't start.
Must not have had a 16-cylinder like Kevin
no,
had.
No. Electric started on the chainsaw. Oh, and nonetheless, it was starting to come out real high. Uh-huh. So she was delighted. I said, well, it sounds like you need to wait just a little bit more time and let it start to branch out from up above. And then you can go in and get on your 12-foot step ladder and trim off that. Which is so, and I've seen that on several crepe myrtles in town. Yeah, mm-hmm. They're just sticking their foot in the water up high and they're starting to leaf out again. So, but you do what you can do is get out the pocket knife and scratch the stem on there. And if it is green down below and it's still got moisture in it and it's green, you keep going up higher and higher into the point where. To the point where there is no more green and moisture down below the bark. And that's basically the dieback point. Mm-hmm. And then you can cut it just slightly below that point and just wait. And the growth that emerges over there, those is adventitious tissue, we call that. In other words, it sort of forms from, it. In other words, there'll be a shift in the type of tissues that are in the plant. Mm-hmm. And it takes a while for them to shift into a branch coming out.
Got it.
So just have to give it a little bit more time. And also, if your crepe myrtles died all the way to the ground, just go ahead and cut them down. And I had to do that with mine in the front yard. Big old thing I transplanted years ago, and I nurtured and babied that thing. Well, anyway.
Yeah. Oh, when? Huh?
And this year, let it go ahead and branch out up with several branches on it. And then next fall into the winter, selectively remove some of the smaller branches or some that just aren't formed very well, and try to have anywhere from 3 to 5 branches coming up, from that mass bush of branches that are coming out. You want to save anywhere from 3 to 5. Okay. And then those will go ahead and be your leaders as you go and they come up. Then you'll have your tree form shrub once again, just in time for it to freeze again. And
start all over again.
But that's kind of one of the good things about crepe myrtles is they do recover. They might have gotten damaged, but they will come back, and they will give you some color this year.
Gotcha.
So I said, well, that's pretty cool, because all the flowers are way up there, and I couldn't see it. So now they're going to be basically at eye level this year. So it'll be more of a big show of color.
Very good.
This year. So, kind of looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Little change in the appearance of the crepe myrtle. So, So there's two schools of thought on that. But you really, still, really, if you do have a big one and you haven't cut it back yet, you might want to check and see if there is some life in it. So also, crepe myrtles, getting time to kind of fertilize them a little bit too, so they'll do quite well, and use just a bloom fertilizer, a little phosphorus in it. On the NPK, it would be a bit more of the P in the middle for phosphorus, and that'll encourage it to grow up. And have better blooms.
And yeah, better
the
blooms.
The color's better with the phosphorus.
It is. It makes it pop.
Yeah. So, and also, sometimes the crepe myrtles, when they grow real fast, they develop this this variegation in the leaf, and that's an indication of perhaps an iron deficiency, too. So a good, well-balanced fertilizer will have some trace elements in it. All those little numbers down below the NPK, those are your trace elements, your iron and magnesium and manganese and boron, zinc, and copper, et cetera. Those will help it out. So get one that has a good quality fertilizer like that, and you'll have better luck with your plants. So anyway, on the shrubs this week, it's time to fertilize. It's still time to cut back your winter kill, say, on your hollies. I noticed the boxwoods here and there have a little bit of dieback on them. And another thing on the boxwoods, the mites are starting to form on the boxwoods. We were at a house yesterday taking out some holly plants that had gotten killed off in the cold, putting in some new ones. And the boxwood just stuck.
No.
And the customer was asking me about them, and I said, look at these little tiny little yellow spots on the leaves. So those are mites. So, and there are several ways to control mites. Mites are an arachnid. They're a spider. So some of the insecticides won't work. The pyrethrins will work. The neem oil is very effective against them. I know I had some stinky on my boxwoods, and I put neem oil on them last week, and now they're doing very well. They don't stink.
Good.
And mites are a constant thing, really. They just don't die and come back, because you can't control all of them unless you dip a whole thing in this stuff. I mean, you can drench it all you want, but there's going to be a few dry spots. So the mite population is one that you have to basically control. And the neem oil is an effective way, about every week or so, maybe every 3 weeks, just to catch the population before it goes into an exponential mode.
Got it.
And that should control it pretty well. So soapy water works pretty well to control mites, and neem oil works pretty well. There's pyrethrins work pretty well too, but still you really can't. There's so many leaves on a boxwood, it's difficult to get the entire population. So it's a control thing, really.
Got it.
Okay. Also, fertilize them. I like to use iron on the boxwoods. Makes them a real deep green color, and that makes them real attractive, I think. And also, they're almost done flushing, so if you want to trim them back, you can probably do it about now, and you probably won't have to do it too much more this summer. So if you want to cut them back really sternly, you need to do that about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago.
Well, okay, there you need that hollow portation thing again.
Yeah, hollow portation. I did that. Some of mine that were getting a little taller around the shed, and I really cut them back. I mean, they're just little antlers.
Oh.
And they're starting to leaf out now, so they'll come back. The boxwood takes a bit more time to recover from heavy pruning, say, than a holly plant. Or something. Use it the same way. You can cut them way back, but it takes some time for them to recover.
Got it.
Dwarf Yopon holly is a little bit different. They bounce back a lot quicker than boxwoods from a heavy pruning. But if you do want to cut your boxwoods back, be prepared for a case of the uglies for a while. But they'll come back.
They will. That's good. Tell you what, we're going to take a little bit of a break. We'll be back after this 2-minute timeout.
If you've been waiting for the best deal on a pre-owned SUV, your wait is over. Head to Roman Chevrolet Buick in Independence today and test drive their 2020 GMC Yukon SLT for just $54,239. A pre-owned 2020 Chevy Equinox LT with less than 6,000 miles is sell priced at $24,249. There's also a 2020 Chevy Tahoe with less than 24,000 miles for $52,674. Add another 2020 Yukon with barely 22,000 miles for $55,235. Roman Chevy Buick. 2313 West Main in Independence. The members of the 2021 graduating class of Bartlesville can be very proud of their accomplishments. Wassmiller shares this pride. Wassmiller Insurance extends congratulations to the following Bartlesville 2021 graduates: Avery Osborne, Yana Osborne, Claire Osborne, Margaret Parrott, Peyton Parrish, William Parsley, Xander Parsons, Amelia Patterson, Megan Pelham, Janelle Pendleton, Caleb Perry, and Cody Peters.
There will be some homes flooded.
Tornado watch for much of the
major
state.
Structural damage is to homes.
When the weather is at its worst, we're at our best.
Heavy rain, obviously, intense lightning.
Depend on K1 AM 1400 FM 93.3 to keep you ahead of the storm.
Trees and power lines down.
Tornado warning.
You can see it on radar.
K1, the one you trust. We're here to prepare you, not scare you.
Summer is almost here, and that means grilling season is about to begin. During their Memorial Day sale, Peters True Value has the Weber Spirit 2E LP gas grill on sale for $419. Protect it with a premium grill cover for only $499. Summer also means honeydew projects, and Peters has DeWalt 12-volt tool combo kit for $119. Shop Peters True Value for these bargains and more during the Memorial Day sale going on now through May 30th. That's Peter's True Value in Dewey.
Good morning and welcome back to the Green Country Gardener Program. It is 8:34 and our phone lines are open for you to talk to our expert Larry Glass at 1-800-749-5936. Yeah, it's a little bit wet to be getting out there, but you and your crews are going outside today, aren't you?
Oh, jeez.
Got your scuba gear.
Yeah, we use plywood to make a roadway, a pathway through people's yards.
That's good.
So the wheelbarrows don't create a new ditch in the front yard. And so
I saw that kind of happening with folks who didn't plan properly in my neighborhood. They got a little divot there they weren't expecting.
Yeah, you get some wetness here and there, but nonetheless. So, when we do work in the heavy weather like this, we do what we can.
Mm-hmm.
And you have your limits as far as what you can do. And it sets our schedule back, too, even more.
So yeah.
Not only did the freezing weather set us back, but now we had maybe 2 days of good weather, and then this comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of sets us back a little bit. Yeah. But we've done a couple of drainage projects this year and been successful in that.
You had a lot to work with.
Golly, I tell you what, this one we did. It's 200 feet long, and we had two different outlets on it, two pumps,
mm-hmm.
and all those pumps. After we put it in this drain pump, we had to put in a pump because of the rock. You couldn't get a track hole in the backyard. There's mm-hmm. too narrow a gap and all that,
mm-hmm.
and so we just used some pumps.
Mm.
They're not that expensive,
no.
And they're pretty reliable too.
Yeah.
And it has pumped nonstop for 2 months now.
Mm-hmm.
It cycles off. You put it in a reservoir,
mm-hmm.
and your drain drains into that. Your field drain drains into that, and then the water comes up. It hits a switch on the pump. It pumps out the water, and the level goes down and up and down and up. And the water just pours into this thing when the pump goes down. Jeez. And the pumps are 42 gallons a minute. And it's run for 2 months now. It has run just about nonstop.
Oh my, yeah.
It's pumping the water out of it. It's just a mess.
Huh.
And before that, their backyard was like a rice paddy for months after it rained.
Oh my.
And now actually, when we had a little bit of a dry spell between the rains this year, the ground actually dried up a little bit.
Looked pretty good.
Yeah. So cool.
There you go.
So that worked out real well. No, wow,
that's good. I always like a good success story.
That's three systems we did like that with pumps. And we did one down the street from this one. And the water just runs out.
Got to go someplace.
So there's some rules to follow on that, too. You know, depth and slope and actually the volume of the...
You have to do your math.
Yeah, the volume of this catchment facility, if mm-hmm. you will, this gravel pit, if you will. Use mm-hmm. big gravel bits. And use a filter cloth around it, mm-hmm. and we use a perforated PVC,
mm-hmm.
and then we use this level thing that we invented to calculate mm-hmm. the slope.
Wow!
And it works quite well.
Super.
So,
how are the roses doing?
Roses are doing pretty good. Julia's not doing very well. I think
oh,
she's kind
no.
of run her. I know she just didn't make it this last winter. So.
Oh goodness!
So I'll have to find another Julia somewhere. But nonetheless, she's doing. She did okay. It bloomed her little heart out, and the cold just finally did her in. So, so I had to get another one.
I noticed the knockouts are starting to pop.
The knockouts are going bananas this year, and I really don't see a lot of the
rosettes.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's because my bush had it. I gave that thing a haircut around Thanksgiving.
Right. And it seems like they're coming back. I really haven't seen very many cases of rosette disease this year. So. Maybe the wintertime, this last winter we had, probably did it in. Who knows? But the rosette disease is a virus that's spread by mites. But we haven't had the heat yet for the mites. So, but knockouts are very resilient plants. So
good. The peonies have been popping like crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You tell you.
Oh, shee-mini.
Yeah, they're very, they were very showy this week. Actually, this is the first year, I think in 40 years, we sold out of peony bushes.
These things are so heavy. The flowers almost were, the blooms were almost touching the ground. I mean, that's just how heavy those things were getting.
Yeah, typically when it when they bloom, we have a lot of rain.
Oh, so boy.
It's the best rain predictor around are the peony blooms. It doesn't rain until they bloom out. That's just the way it is every year.
The emergency peony system.
So if you want it to rain, just plant some peony plants.
There you go.
Right now on your trees, it's time to trim back your dogwoods if you need right now. They're done blooming. Dogwoods, remember, set their blooms in July and August. So you've got a little bit of time to get it done. However, if you want more blooms, you might want to consider pruning it ASAP.
There you go.
If there's something in the way, an errant growth you might want to control, or you may maybe want some more density on the plant or something, or just to shape it up to make it look more attractive, now's the time to do that on your boxwood, on your dogwoods, rather.
Okay.
It's a time also for fertilizing those dogwoods. They're growing very quickly, and they need a little bit of nourishment, if you will. So just use a regular, don't overdo it, just use a regular fertilizer. And keep in mind, though, you need to fertilize it at the drip line. I see so many people, they take the whole bag and pour it on the trunk. It doesn't work. No. It just burns it up. You just put a little bit around it, and you fertilize on a regular, fairly regular basis, just a little bit. Never all at once like that.
Spread out your meals. It's not an all-you-can-eat buffet. There you go.
There you go. Pretty good.
That's coming from a fat guy.
So, I've been to a buffet in over a year.
You ain't missing anything.
And also, it's a good time to plant new trees. And also, make note of utilities and drainage patterns, too. So you don't create a problem in the future and you don't cut off your internet. You'll have a rather angry child if you cut off their internet. So
their
neighbors to you. So be very careful when doing that. So anyway, well, go back to maiden grass.
Yes.
The maiden grass got set back a little bit by this cold.
Oh, it did. Yeah.
Its recovery is a little bit slow here and there, but I think it'll make a recovery pretty good. Okay. Make sure to cut back all the tops as soon as possible because they're starting to emerge. The pampas grass for the sun part got just totally killed off this last cold spell. Pampas grass typically grows about a zone south of here, and we've been able to get away with it for the last few years by planting it and letting it come back rather robustly. But that kind of came to an end. So the pampas grass I have seen is recovering a little bit here and there, but you need to give it a little bit of time. What you want to do is kind of pull on the stems, the abbreviated stems that you've cut back, kind of give them a bit of a pull sideways. And if they come out, they should come out really easily.
Okay.
That way you know that it's kind of died back. So so anyway, you get new ones and they
you'll be fine.
Yeah, they'll be just fine. But anyway, the pampas grass took a real bad hit this year. So give them a little fertilizer and maybe some heat, too. They'll come back real nicely.
All right. We'll take a little break right here. We'll be back with more of the Green Country Gardener program after this two-minute timeout.
Spring is here at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses. And Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses has new shipments of annuals, perennials, herbs, trees, and shrubs arriving daily. It's a must-see what they have in stock. Get ready for spring at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses, home to Bartlesville's largest plant selection. Discount days are back. Every Wednesday, take 10% off regular priced items. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5, Sunday.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm fleece on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy backsplash.
I want to be a bike that races around the country.
I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
I want to be a rocking chair on a sunny
skyscraper.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
And welcome back to the Green Country Gardener Program. Larry Glass is our expert, and you can call in and tap his expertise by phone at 1-800-749-5936.
Another thing I noticed yesterday in going around people's yards, the lace bugs are starting to come out on the azaleas.
Oh.
Remember we talked about it way back when it was snowy and cold.
Yeah.
Better be prepared for those. Anyway, they're out right now. So a systemic such as imidacloprid will do a good job to control those lace bugs. Also, the same thing that works with the mites, application of neem oil will also control them too, but they have a tendency to fly around, so you might miss them.
Pesky things.
Insecticides generally don't work for them. For spider mites, they generally don't work, so you have to use something else for spider mites. However, the pyrethrin does seem to work on the spider mites. You need to plan your beds also for ease of watering when you do your planning for your spring, and plan out the weed control and know your plant's requirements. And how is your soil? Do the drop test on your soil. Yeah, I know this is kind of talking in review because a lot of people have planted their things already.
Yeah.
But if you haven't, there's some good things. And right now is a good time to check your soil, do a drop test, and pick it up, take a clump, and drop it. And if it looks like an uncooked biscuit when it hits the ground, you might want to amend your soil a little bit. That's pretty much the case everywhere around here.
Right now.
So we like to add a lot of compost to the soil.
Mm-hmm.
You get your area and divide it by 8 to get how many bags of compost you're going to need to put in your soil. So that would be in other words, you've got 100 square feet divided by 8. That's what the 30 bags, something I wouldn't know it. It's not that much. So that would give you an idea of what you need. 12 bags, enough for that area. So anyway, so the compost helps keep the soil good and loose, and we use it a whole lot of it when we do our landscaping. We use compost by the boatload to help keep the soil loose and make the plants real healthy. So you might consider doing that. When you do get a shrub or a tree, get a bag of compost too. It's already done. You don't have to wait. It's just ready. You pour it out of the bag and mix it in the soil.
That's all you do.
It helps aerate the soil, too. On new plantings, all the roots are right in this one little area. They're not spread out yet. They're right here. And because of that, they tend to get an anaerobic soil condition the way the clay is right in here. And it can cause rotting of the roots. And root rot is probably one of the biggest problems people have with their new plantings is root rot. And they bring in this plant diet, they bring it in, and the roots are just kind of hanging
there.
They just break off. Well, you watered it too much. Oh, so, well, I want another one. Okay, fine. We'll see if we can make a deal on that. But anyway, when you do water, you get your new plants, you water them and let them dry out between waterings. And kind of a general thing, when I plant something new at my house, it's got to really want the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to show me.
Tell me you're thirsty.
Show me you're thirsty. Then I'll water the hound out of it. Uh-huh. And then wait till it shows me it's thirsty.
Then there you go.
So let it go to the wilt point.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when we plant a lot of things, we just keep in mind how the drainage works over there, and perhaps we mound it up a little bit,
mm-hmm.
so we can make the transition from this ideal growing soil condition in the pot, mm-hmm. to whatever you call your dirt.
Well, so in your case, limestone.
So yeah, really. So it'll transition nicely from one culture to another culture.
Mm-hmm.
These plants, they can't adjust to change it very quickly. So you have to kind of usher them in, if you will.
Got it.
And that's sort of where the planting practices, as mm-hmm. well as the compost, comes in handy to get them to transition from one area to another. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of this stuff online. Well, you don't need to add this stuff and all that. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't know our soil.
No, they don't.
So we have to transition the plant like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at what they're planted into. If you have a question as to how your soil should be, make an observation as to the soil in which the plant is planted.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll tell you right away. Just a culture shock, I guess. It's sort of like moving to a new town and...
Mm-hmm.
and having the faucets backwards or something, whatever. But we're going to a foreign country and having weird plumbing.
I know what you're talking about. Go to Australia. That'll mess with you.
Yeah, the water runs uphill there.
Yeah.
So anyway, the plants have to adjust to their environment, and that's why we go through so much compost, and that's why we add the compost to the mm-hmm. soil, so they can adjust to your soil and your soil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Get a landscape plan, just give me a call. I do a lot of these. If you see something you like, give an address. I can look at it, and I can emulate that somewhat, if you will. So landscape plans are pretty easy to get. You just give us a call. I'll come out to the house.
All right.
And look your yard over, take some pictures, and measure it a little bit, and then make a landscape plan.
All right.
Together with a budget and all that, too. So
I'll give you a call. We're the one that used to have tires in the front yard. We moved them. So...
You moved into the backyard.
Oh, yeah.
You know, tires are really good for growing potatoes.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. You just put them on the ground and put the tire on and get some hay and put it on top.
Next thing you know, taters.
And then when they green up, you put another tire on, yeah. add the hay. And then when they grow up, you keep going. You have the stack of potatoes, of tires, 10 tires high.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pull the tires away and you got all these potatoes.
There you go.
That's what I've read. And actually, in the past, you've had callers who have done that.
Yeah, I got that out of Better Homes and Junkyards.
Oh, really?
Oh, golly.
If there's some fix-a-flat in the tire, it works even better.
There you go. We'll be back after this three-minute timeout.
The original Waldorf Astoria Hotel on Fifth Avenue in New York City was built in 1893. Constructed in the German Renaissance style, the hotel had 450 guest rooms and another 100 rooms for staff and servants. After merging with their next-door neighbor, the Astoria Hotel, in 1897, the hotel had 1,300 rooms, making it the largest hotel in the world at the time. The Empire Room at the hotel was the largest and most lavishly decorated room in the Waldorf, and quickly became one of the finest restaurants in New York City. From the beginning, the Waldorf was the must-stay place for foreign dignitaries from around the world. Some of those guests were the leaders of China, the Princess Siam, the Grand Duchess of Russia, and many others. Andrew Carnegie was a regular guest at the hotel, and the Waldorf Astoria Bar became a favorite haunt for many of the financial elite, such as Diamond Jim Brady, Buffalo Bill Cody, and Bat Masterson. In short, anyone who was anyone in the world of politics, society, business, or entertainment wanted to be seen at the Waldorf. It truly was the world's hotel. Following the tragic sinking of the Titanic, the Waldorf Hotel was the official site for the inquiry that was performed by the United States Senate into the disaster. With this backdrop, our very own Frank Phillips was a major player at the Waldorf. In 1929, a private corporation was formed by Uncle Frank, and he became part owner of the Waldorf. Later that year, they sold the buildings and the land to a corporation named Empire State, Inc. Their plan was to demolish the hotel, which they did, and build the Empire State Building in that location. In July of 1929, prior to the demolition, Frank Phillips inspected the hotel and paid particular attention to four handsome chandeliers which hung in the tap room of the hotel. When the hotel was gutted in preparation for the demolition, Frank was given those ornate lights. He promptly shipped them to Oklahoma and had them hung in the great living room of the Woolerock Lodge, where they illuminated family gatherings, business meetings, cocktail parties, poker games, and many other social events. Whenever asked by guests about the lights, Frank liked to joke and say they were all that he got out of his investment, calling them his million-dollar chandeliers and declaring them the most expensive in the country. The magic of New York City and the Waldorf Astoria from 1893 is still part of the lodge today and the wonderful history of Woolerock. That same magic still exists. Welcome home to Woolerock.
Depend on K1AM 1400 and FM 93.3 for locally sourced news, weather, and sports to and from work and everything in between. K1, the one you trust.
Getting our groove on. This is the Green Country Gardener Program. It's 8:54, and our phone lines are open. You can speak with our expert, Larry Glass, here at 1-800-749-5936. Lawrence?
It might seem rather odd, but you might consider an irrigation system in your yard.
Have you noticed a lot of water?
I've seen people's sprinkler systems running.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. It looks like the Bellagio Hotel in your front yard.
Well, it might.
Perhaps they're just using that for entertainment, I guess. I don't know.
Expensive entertainment.
But anyway, on your irrigation system, when you design the sprinkler system, you have to consider the available water pressure, number one.
Mm-hmm.
How much water can you get? Number two, how much water can you get to that rather narrow aperture known as a 5/8-inch meter?
There you go.
I like to work around 12 gallons a minute.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
So, and then also look at your regional priorities. What areas do you want to water?
Mm-hmm.
What's the most important thing you want to water? Probably the last thing is the grass. Bermuda grass would grow. Okay. I watered my yard twice last year.
That's all you had to do. Some people, their sprinkler systems aren't all that accurate. And they do a great job on the driveway.
Yeah. And actually, I had a customer come in, and he said, golly, my water bill is just outrageous. And I said, when I water my front yard, half it runs out in the street because it's on a slope. And, you know, bingo.
there lies the problem there.
There lies the problem.
Gravity.
And we've done this with some people. We've reprogrammed their sprinkler timers to where if you do have a slope like that mm-hmm. and you happen to have spray heads, they apply water at a very high rate. In other words, inches per hour is very high on those, mm-hmm. as opposed to a rotary head, which has a low inch per hour rate. So I tell you, what I do is I tell people, you turn on your sprinkler, run it for X number of minutes, and when the water starts to run off down the hill, that's your what they call your saturation point. Mm-hmm. So you need to shut it off at that point. I mean, that's all the time you want to give it. Well, that's not enough. You'll be surprised how well it'll do, really, mm-hmm. if you just do it to the runoff point, because that's water you're just throwing away.
You don't want to do that.
So anyway, a good sprinkler system will be engineered to compensate for that. Now, there are spray heads that come up, and they have a very low rate of precipitation, mm-hmm. equivalent almost to about to a, not almost, but about to a rotary head.
Okay.
And they have these interesting little streams that come up like this. They're kind of poetic, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's R11, R13 or something. The Rainbird makes them. And you put them on a standard 1804 pop-up head, and they pop up, and they spray a pattern about 18, 20 feet out. And they have these little streams that come out. And they irrigate at a very slow rate. They're also very good at conserving water.
Mm-hmm.
So because they do apply at a slow rate, and it soaks into the ground before it has a chance to run off. However, if you don't want to make any changes, you keep in mind the runoff rate and also your inches per hour, and then do 1 inch per week. of irrigation. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes these programmers on the timers, on the sprinkler systems have an A, B, a C, and sometimes a D program.
Mm-hmm.
And you can separate that from your A program, which waters everything, and then have it run for, say, 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the midday, and 5 minutes in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So it will soak into the ground before running off. And that way you can save money on your irrigation.
Work smarter, not harder. It's
and
all about
another
efficiency.
Thing is yeah. Know your rate of precipitation. Your contractor should tell you how much water you're getting per hour on your irrigation mm-hmm. system, and that'll tell you how long to run it per week. In mm-hmm. other words, 1 inch of water per week. And you don't need to run it every day, every other day, every third day, whatever. You mm-hmm. just need to put down an inch of water. And once you determine that, once that number is established, it's very easy to program your timer. And I went to somebody's house. Their timer was programmed, A, B, C, D programmed. They had timer on. It was stacking up. Their yard was like a swamp. And I just don't understand this thing. I had to clear out so many startups. Duplicate startups on the same one.
Let's just clean this up here and start all over again.
So you have they sort of confuse program A, B, and C, D with the actual single startup.
Yeah.
So you want to know pretty well. You might even do a spreadsheet on there, which shows you how to do it, and then program according to that. Or you can get an orbit timer, not worry about it.
There you go.
It does it on its own. It accounts for the weather and all that other stuff, too.
That's pretty neat.
So anyway, come by the nursery. Check us out. We've got all kinds of cool stuff. Plenty of annuals, perennials, mm-hmm. Lots of tomato plants. We even have some big tomato plants that are starting to exhibit some fruit on them.
Mm-hmm.
And house plants. We still have a few bulbs left. Elephant ears. We've about sold out of those. We've sold a ton of these great big old elephant ear bulbs. Got to, mm-hmm. you know, it'll feed a family of six. It's so big. So we've got some of those, and
all wasabi sauce,
and Happy Frog products, and we got some other organics too. We're trying to emphasize a bit more organic stuff because they're effective and they're harmless to the environment. And golly, anytime you plant something, Tom, make sure to keep that shovel sharp. We'll see you next week.
For residential and commercial plumbing, call Mason's Plumbing, where serving you is their priority. This is KWON Bartlesville and 93.3 FM.